Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 1st of March 2019, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. We're delighted to be joined by David Scott, Northern Exposure, reporting from north of the border, and David Ellis from Strategic Defence Initiatives. Well, defence is a key place to start, isn't it, Mike?
Well, it is, because there's stuff going on today which is of interest. So in order to sort of lead into that, we need to ask this question. When Theresa May is talking about security, what is it that she's talking about? Well, there are three main areas. According to the Cabinet Office document, EU Exit Assessment of the Security Partnership, and the three main areas are civilian law enforcement, judicial, foreign policy, intelligence and defence, and what they're describing is thematic cooperation, so that's cyber, health and civil contingencies. So that's what they're describing that it means. But if we look at the defence aspect of this first, and we'll come on to the policing aspect of it in a minute, but if we look at the defence aspect of it first, it says, this document says, cooperation will continue on the basis of non-EU international agreements. This is in the event of a no deal. And really what we want to highlight here is the fact that we've shown this graphic before, but it's the fact that those non-EU international agreements already exist with respect to European defence, at least, because we have the 2010 Lancaster House treaties, the 2018 Sandhurst treaties between Britain and France, and also the efforts of the Franco-British Council. And between France and Germany, we have the Aachen Treaty. And between Britain and Germany, well, from last October, we have a joint vision statement. But what has been announced today is that yesterday, Britain and Germany held the first ever UK-German defence ministerial. So this is Gavin Williamson and Ursula von der Leyen on screen there. They've held their first ever UK defence ministerial, UK-German defence ministerial council, affirming, they say, the two countries' long-term commitment to working together. So this was held at RAF Bryce Norton. So although they're describing this as the discussions between two NATO allies, clearly this is as a result of a non-EU international agreement. They said the UK-German relationship has been accelerating in recent years, with the two nations signing a joint vision statement on increasing defence cooperation last October. And at Bryce Norton yesterday, that vision became a reality as the UK and Germany committed to cooperating on NATO's Baltic air policing mission with German Typhoons departing their, German Typhoons depart their Estonian airbase in April and British Typhoons fly in to take their place. Each force will share expertise with the other on how they conduct the deployment. And alongside the similar Franco-British Council and the French-German Defence and Security Council, the UK-Germany Defence Ministerial Council ties up a powerful security triangle to defend European security. If we just go back to the previous slide here, David Ellis, first of all, we're talking about non-EU international agreements, and this is the tripartite, or the what did I call it? I can't remember, but it doesn't matter. The point here is this is a powerful security triangle, as they're describing it, and it is going to form the basis of EU defence in the future.
Absolutely correct. So you've got the Cabinet Office paper there, the engine room of the government, or whatever you'd want to call it, whether that be an occupying power or whatever, but that whatever that is, it constitutes it, are continuing to co-op to. So the cooperation is to continue with unification to defence union. That's the key point. Now, the two aspects here, of course, is the structure's already built, the bilaterals already exist, and the EU will take ownership of the bilaterals to do the final stages of the unification in absolute. Now, the fundamental here is, of course, is that the MPs are not challenging this and are totally silent with a Remain leadership. So that it's not a question of parties anymore. Forget that. You can't look at it in terms of Labour or Conservative. It's a question of Remain.
Okay, well, Troika actually was the word I was looking for. But look, the other thing that was announced here, David, was this, that RAF Coningsby will be twinned with the Lage Air Base in Germany, following the twinning of transport bases RAF Breis Norton and Wunsdorf. Such partnerships apparently boost understanding and learning best practices from each other through pilot exchange programs. Brian, this is total EU policy, because the whole twinning of towns and cities in the UK is something that absolutely came from Brussels.
Well, absolutely. I'm nearly lost for words on this one, because it is so obvious what's happening here. We take twinning. That's one of the subjects that Dave Barnby covered in great detail in his book, The EU, A Corporatist Racket, where he described the propaganda campaign that was run through the European Union into this country to try and convince people to sign into the common market. And of course, twinning was a way of softening up the British people, the idea that Europe was about friendly relations between little villages or towns. The twinning programme, that was part of the propaganda in order to get the European Union project in. And of course, we've now got twinning stamped on all of the names of towns we see as we drive through. And what are we doing here? We're talking Brexit, but at the same time, we're now locking together the military systems. This is obvious. It's in front of our eyes, provided we know where to look. But David, you've made the point there. It doesn't matter what MP you're dealing with. It doesn't matter what party. There's an absolute wall of silence on this. And our own Johnny Mercer, Conservative MP down here in Plymouth, is complicit. He is part of this. Utter silence, will not talk out about the fact our military is being merged into this massive EU military machine. I'm smiling because I almost don't know what to say. Sorry.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And it's a wall of, you know, it's across all of it. And, you know, you've got to sort of say to yourself now, we have got something very, very sinister going on as to why how and why they can have this degree of parliamentary silence, whilst it's blatantly apparent that this thing is happening and nothing's being said about it. Now, I've got to say, I put a tweet out on this yesterday, and it sparked some quite good responses. And one of them was a like coming back from Angus Lapsley, senior civil servant there at the MOD. And, you know, for him to turn around and sort of like a tweet that says, why aren't the MPs talking about this, really says it all, doesn't it?
It does. But let's have a look at what Gavin Williamson is actually saying about this. He said the world may be darker and more dangerous than at any time since the fall of the Berlin Wall 30 years ago. But by strengthening our partnership with Germany, we can uphold European security, defend the international rules-based order, and look forward to brighter skies of peace and prosperity. And I think that says it all. So let's progress on with this slightly, because in the event of no deal, going back to the Cabinet Office document, the second point that they make here is that you need to have legislation in place. And of course, we do have legislation in place. That's the Withdrawal Act, where we have put all the European legislation on our statute books. But in any case, we have this.
First of all, in the intelligence and security sector, UK will not leave. It's a big secret, but you will not leave.
So we will not leave, and that is coming from the head of EU intelligence. Yeah. So he, I assume, knows something about what the intention is with respect to intelligence and security. That's the phrase he used, intelligence and security, with respect to the UK's commitments with respect to intelligence, security and Brexit. He's saying we're not going to leave. David, it's pretty clear what his position is. This seems to be...
Yeah, it's abundantly clear there. You know, this guy is saying you will not leave. and the tone that he's doing it in, this is a matter of fact, because when we're not leaving, we will be in defence union, but we're being taken into this into silence. So what my understanding of that is now, and I'm not prejudicing any further evidence coming in, is that there's been some kind of prenuptial Brexit agreement between Junckers, Macron, Merkel, Tony Blair and David Cameron to expedite this vital facet of the EU becoming a state of defence union so it can have its treasury and so it can tax. And it's been, no, that, well, you know, you can go through all this charade of arguing about customs union and borders or whatever else, all this ping pong we've had with Theresa May for the last 2 years of going round chasing her own tail. But the main work's already been done. All the rest of it's pretty much irrelevant. And it doesn't matter whether we leave on the 31st of March or not. This carries on because the MPs have not done their job. They have not challenged it and they've not pulled any of it up whatsoever. It's been allowed to go through as if it's on literally a prenuptial marriage agreement. Totally beyond and outside of Brexit. It's never been brought into Brexit because the MPs have allowed it to stay out.
And David, we've just, because that the audio on that clip was very quiet, we've done our best to try and boost it. Mike's put the subtitles in on the screen. But what the man was saying was that it was secret.
Well, so, well, I've got the specific quote here. First of all, in the intelligence and security sector, UK will not leave. It may be a secret. You will not leave.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, so we're in the bizarre situation where EU officials know what's going on, but the British public doesn't know what's going on because the MPs are in a conspiracy to deceive them over this subject. And if we've moved through the segment, but Mike, that definition of what security was also, for instance, involved health. So this isn't just a matter that Britain's military is being locked into this system. Health, border control, cyber,
civil contingencies,
civil contingencies. This is the European Fourth Reich being built. There's no question of it. And it's being done as if the British public no longer exist. The arrogance and the contempt coming out of Westminster in this country at the moment is just breathtaking.
Well, look, let's move on through a couple of items here now. In order to make this happen, of course, we've seen defence cuts happening over quite a period of time now. Well, one of the areas of cuts has been with respect to the property that the Ministry of Defence manages, owns and manages on behalf of our armed services. And so, well, the Defence Estate Optimisation Programme has, they've just published the latest spreadsheet on this. And as you can see, RAF bases, barracks, infantry barracks, all kinds of stuff being set for disposal within the next 10 years or so. So this is the Ministry of Defence published an update to the Defence Estate Optimisation Programme, setting new information for 33 military bases. As you can see, there are 4 of the 33 that they now intend to retain, but the rest have to go because apparently that the Defence Estate currently accounts for approximately 1.8% of the UK's landmass, with over 40% of the estate being over 50 years old. This does not support the future needs of the UK Armed Forces or represent the best value for the taxpayer. By creating a smaller, more focused estate, investment can be directed to our enduring sites to meet military requirements and increase prosperity for surrounding communities. Yes.
Well, this doesn't make sense, Mike, because we are a very small land mass and this puts us at a huge disadvantage in the time of war. Because if nuclear weapons are going to be used, you've got nowhere to hide things. And the military infrastructure, most of it has been military infrastructure left over from the Second World War in particular, where you deliberately dispersed that military infrastructure to make it safe. So this reducing it to ever smaller amounts.
Reducing the number of targets?
Is actually, yeah, reducing it. Just hit one target and you take out the whole supply chain. So on one hand, we're being told that those nasty nasty Russians are going to murder us all in our beds. And on the other hand, we are slaughtering the defence infrastructure here, which is placing the country at an even greater risk. So this is either mad men and women at work, or this is a deliberate agenda. We don't need our infrastructure because it's going to be, we are simply going to be 2% of this European monster.
Right. And the other part of this, the definition of security, as we said, it mentioned civilian policing and the judiciary and so on. And of course, we've mentioned on this programme many times before that this is an EU-NATO, a joint EU-NATO programme, because Mogherini and Stoltenberg announced it at the 2015 conference that they held. So we're merging military and policing in certain areas. Well, here is the Home Office Security and Policing event, which is taking place on the 5th to the 7th of March next week. Defence Accelerator will be there, this group of people that provide money for new technologies for the defence industry. So they will be attending the Security and Policing Home Office event 2019 at the Farnborough International Exhibition and Conference Centre. It's being hosted by the Joint Security and Resilience Centre and is partnered with the Department for International Trade, Defence and Security Organisation. So this is apparently about civilian policing, but in fact it seems to be more about defence and new defence technology. The event will provide the opportunity to view the latest developments in the UK security market, with over 400 companies exhibiting under one roof. DASA has two locations at the event, a stand with government networking zone and a stand with the government demonstration zone. And they're going to be joined by the Department for Transport, Future Aviation Security Solutions Programme, SCANA MSC, Future Aviation Security Solutions Supplier, CrowdThink with a K, which is all about improving crowd resilience, ModView, which is Open Call Rapid Innovation Supplier, I don't know what that is, and Aleph Insights Limited, which is apparently about revolutionising the human information relationship for defence suppliers. So, David, this is not about civilian, well, the event is about civilian policing, but clearly this the involvement of the Ministry of Defence is not about civilian policing. It's about security and EU security at that.
Yeah, people have got to get to grips with what this single point concept is, because it's defence, security, policing, the lot. It's lock, stock, and it's literally lock, stock, and barrel. And all of this is being shoehorned in. This is an EU agenda. This is an absolute EU agenda being driven through the Cabinet Office, again, unchallenged by the MPs. And they're pitching us this, that we're leaving the EU, and yet they're blatantly bringing in single point command and control there for police and military and security all in one umbrella. You know, there'll be no separation of offices at all. It won't be anything like the system that previous generations in the country have known. It will be a completely different authoritarian system. And this is where why we've got to be so brutal now with these MPs, because they're being so cynical in their contempt of their office as an MP for the people that they purport to represent.
Yes. Now, I want to highlight briefly this article on the UK Column website, Brexit, the Constitutional Position. It's by John Bingley, who is a long-standing constitutional campaigner and has a pretty deep understanding of the British Constitution. Now, it's a heavy read, I'll say that, because it was written for the House of Lords, and this paper has gone into the House of Lords recently. But, David, the main focus of this, or at least the aspect of this we're going to highlight today, is that the point that John Bingley, or one of the points that he's making, is that constitutionally Britain has no right to have a standing army. And in fact, constitutionally, Parliament is required to re-vote for the army to exist. Well, it used to be every year, but now it's once per Parliament. And therefore, from a constitutional position, it's pretty hard for us to be, in fact, it's unlawful for us to be making commitments to an EU standing army when we don't have one ourselves.
That's absolutely correct. So this, from the spurting out that we've seen so far from quite a few MPs talking about constitutional crisis, there's a bit in this in the media, a few of them on the telly, No, that's not what it is. It's a crisis with the Constitution. And this, we believe, is the stumbling block. Within the Bill of Rights is the standing army component. And of course, Defence Union is putting that into absolute breach. And this is where we believe that that there's the drive to alter the Constitution, have a new Constitution, or at least play some sort of nasty game with it. So John Bingley here has written this Brexit paper. It's gone in through the House of Lords. There are one or two lords looking at it, talking about it, and it's been debated very briefly to an extent in the Lords. But it's gone through the party whip. It's gone through the Conservative Party whip. It's gone to Earl Howe. It's gone all the way up the command chain. And it's gone into number 10, we understand. Now, it's in a special office in number 10 that Theresa May has effectively the keys to, and it's resting there. Now, what we need to do is to understand the conclusions. Yes, you're right, it is a long read, but it's the conclusions of the paper that are the important thing that we take away and propagate. So it's vital that we bring all of the aspects of Brexit, the military, the defence union and the constitution together here. And there's the tooling there for everybody to go and challenge their MPs, because clearly this is the constitution and the points that John are making are absolutely valid. And we need to get this propagated to as many people as possible, as fast as possible. I understand Frederick Forsyth is also writing about this as we speak, and we can be expecting him to be putting some stuff out of it and hopefully to get some more awareness of this. And actually, because obviously it's in number 10, so we now need to corner them. Everybody's got to go out and do their bit.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you, David. Brian.
Well, let's just have a look at what MPs are up to. Very grateful for the person who's been sending me these notes from Johnny Mercer, the Conservative MP down in Plymouth. So this is the latest, Friday, the 1st of March. And what's he got to say? Well, he's saying another busy couple of weeks and everything is dominated by Brexit. But it's the second paragraph here that I found very interesting. If we were to vote again, I'm convinced that Leave would win, but with a greater majority than before. I myself would vote to leave. When I voted in the referendum in 2016, I'd been in politics barely a year. It's clear to me now that the European Union is, quote, a project that is fundamentally out of keeping with the British people's psyche. Their behaviour throughout this process has been disingenuous, to say the least, and I'm convinced that we will be better off out. So on the surface, that looks OK. But of course, he's saying that the behaviour of the European Union has been disingenuous, when in fact it's the MPs themselves. Let's just have a look at this one. Well, here's Johnny. I couldn't resist that. This is Sky News from 19th of October 2018. Tory MP Johnny Mercer rips into his own party and government H1T show, as described there. What's he on now? Well, basically, he says he won't vote Tory and his values are no longer in line with the Tory party. He said that people are openly ridiculing the Tories, quite correct, suggesting his party has nothing to offer voters beyond Brexit. We could say that's correct. Suggesting Mrs. May is a technocrat. Well, she's not a technocrat. She's at the moment deceiving the British public, but he doesn't say that. He claims Chequers is a classic professional politician's answer that pleases nobody. That was the outcome of Chequers. He says this, I'm a patriot. I'm not going to sit at the back of the bus and watch it head towards the edge of the cliff. I'm not going to let us go down without a serious, and he uses the SH1T fight again. Well, we've got a question. Why is it that this ex-army captain will not tell his constituents and the wider British public the truth about Theresa May's deception in signing over British forces to the EU Defence Union? I know you've already briefly covered this, David, but it is extraordinary that you've got a man who's been there twice in Afghanistan. He's been on the sharp end and he deserves credit for that, but he will not tell the truth about what is really being done to Britain's military. And I have to say, is it because he doesn't know? Is it because he doesn't actually have the mental acumen to understand what's going on around him? Or is he also complicit in deceiving the public? How do we, how do we evaluate these MPs?
Can I suggest, on the face of judging him by their actions and a litmus test of are they talking about defence union, I suggest we judge them harshly. Mike, have you got the two slides from Anne-Marie Trevelyan and David Davis?
Not just off the top of my head.
It's just two back.
It's not.
Just pop them up while we talk, because this articulates this group all in a very succinct fashion. Right, so we've got David Davis there. He's once again cozying up to troops in uniform and wanting the PR op to be credible because he's an MP and he needs to be seen to be supporting the armed services. We've got Anne-Marie Trevelyan there doing the same with her pinned tweet. Now, we did have a bit of joy with Anne because she retweeted a tweet of ours of who would sign the new EU defence union treaty, because we understand Gavin doesn't want to do it. He's a bit shy about that, understandably. But we're seeing this modus operandi, aren't we? We saw it with Theresa May at the start of Brexit, cozying up to troops and tanks and then going off with Nick Carter and doing God knows what with Junkers and Mogherini and co. So they're really, really cynical, aren't they? You know, they are perpetrating, allowing it to continue, and yet cozying up to the troops in the uniforms all the while. So I think when we see these MPs doing this, we've got to absolutely leap on them and give them a damn good grilling.
Yep, absolutely. OK, we've got to move on very quickly. If you like what we're doing and you would like to support the UK Column, you can do that by heading over to ukcolumn.org/community. And join us there, and also available on the UK Column website, AV9.1 DVDs. Quick reminder that all the residential tickets for AV10 are sold out, but there is a waiting list in case anybody drops out. So if you want to join that, get in touch with Ian R. Crane.
And a talk tonight in the Lugger Hotel, that's on the seafront at Penzance. Subject will be vaccines. That starts at 19:30 tonight. So I will be attending. And look forward to seeing anybody else who can get down there. It will be a very good event. Justin Walker from the British Constitution Group will also be there.
Okay, now let me welcome David Scott to the programme with this one. US seen likely to win in effort to shut down World Trade Organization's appeals court. David, this is something that Trump has been trying to get organised for quite some time now. The caption here says the United States has blocked appointments of judges to the appellate body, throwing the WTO into crisis as it runs out of legal muscle to rule on international trade disputes. And increasingly, the United States, of course, dealing with international trade disputes through economic warfare and sanctions.
Indeed. And what you're seeing here, I feel that's a sign of something much bigger stirring beneath the surface. There are many elements to this. Trump's Make America Great Again is openly mercantilist. It's using trade wars, trade barriers, tariffs to make America great, and essentially operating in a exclusionary, bigger thy neighbour approach, and using military might in the trade area. None of this ends well. It impoverishes the society as a whole, and it does tend to promote conflict. And you're seeing here the American move against the World Trade Organization was hardly a free trading organization, but it did moderate things, I suppose. So you're seeing American move against that, so that you're going to have more geopolitical might playing rather than what they call Trump as the rules-based international order. So you're seeing the old system wither. And we're not fully seeing what's going to replace it, but I would suggest it will be much more red in tooth and claw.
Indeed. Now, we haven't had the opportunity, David, to discuss with you yet the issue of what's going on with Labour and anti-Semitism in detail, but just wanted to, Vanessa Bealey actually asked me to drop this one in just to let everybody know that there's a petition on change.org to lift the suspension against Chris Williamson MP. The petition begins, anti-Semitism is now being used as a weapon to silence those who would speak out against injustice. It's being used in such a way as to silence freedom of speech. The cries of anti-Semitism are now being used in an inappropriate way. I think that's absolutely the case. And David, I do wonder how much of the attack on Chris Williamson is less to do perhaps with any comments that he may have made with respect to the Labour Party and anti-Semitism, and maybe more to do with his intervention with respect to the Integrity Initiative and actually a number of other areas too.
Well, yes, I wondered if Integrity Initiative was actually at the heart of that. So let's be quite clear. Chris Williamson, whether you agree with him or not on any given issue, didn't do anything anti-Semitic. He didn't say anything anti-Semitic. He did not harm any single person of a Jewish ethnic background. None of these things happened. What he said was that he didn't think that the Labour Party was guilty as charged on the subject of anti-Semitism. Now, that's an opinion. You can agree with that, you can disagree with that. And my views on this matter don't really fit into this format, and I'd like to explore them with you later at greater length. But whether or not you agree with that view, it is a view. Right? It's a perfectly legitimate view, and it got him suspended. Now, he made the mistake again, and he did this with Artsman, of apologising. Right? When you're dealing with this sort of attack, social justice warrior attack, it uses weapons and ideas. It uses words as weapons and ideas as weapons. Truth is irrelevant. They are using this to silence people and for group power over people. Ideas are of no specific right or wrong judgment about them. They're just weapons. You get nowhere by apologising, because all it does is show weakness and courage. It encourages more attacks. He tried to apologise. He put out a long statement apologising and withdrawing and regretting his words, and he was suspended the same day. You cannot get out of this by apologising. You have to stand your ground, Mr. Williamson. You have to stand up there and say, what I said was accurate. This is what I believe. Put your shoulders back and stand.
Couldn't agree more. David, couldn't agree more. Now, just briefly, the issue of screen time and children, of course, has been in the press over the last couple of months. Well, Dr. Mike Williams, who's written for us before on the issue of organ transplants and so on, and the opt-out on that, has written this article for us, Screen Time is Damaging Us. The UK Chief Medical Officers got it wrong. It's a long article. I do recommend people read it. It's full of medical and scientific literature. He's quoting from that to demonstrate the harms that are done. But this is on the basis of the government report, which basically said, well, there's not too much to worry about here. You shouldn't worry too much and let your children continue to use mobile phones and tablets and so on. Do have a read at that and have a look.
And share.
And share, absolutely. Now, David, the next thing we're coming to is the issue of a smacking ban in Scotland. And, why would this be of interest to a UK column audience?
This is one of the Scottish Government moves against traditional parenting, and it involves the state and family life. This brings out many of the aspects of the therapeutic state, the managerial state, the state as a substitute for religious belief, the state as something which will heal society and correct all of your wrongs, the state as redeemer. This is what's coming increasingly forward all across the Western world. And Scotland, I regret to say, seeks to be at the forefront of this. So we are a bit of a lab rat nation. And this illustrates what's coming for the rest of you, I'm sorry to say.
So, well, give us a bit of background. There was a government debate on this, or a select committee.
It was a select committee. It was evidence to the committee in the Scottish Parliament. And there were several people here. We got a little video clip, and the video clip is from the one dissenting voice, Stuart Wayton of the University of Abu Tay, who's a criminologist. And as you listen to this, I want to just be aware of two other things. One, the person sitting next to him, the woman sitting next to him, is Professor Jane Callahan. Very interesting woman. You watch her face when Stuart Wayton talks about the political elite, right? Just watch her, watch the sneer on her face. It says an awful lot. And the other thing is, at the end, you will hear the response of the convener of that committee. And the convener is Ruth Bernadette Maguire, SNP, MSP. And her reaction to what is said is very strange. And I'll be looking for Brian's comment on that once you've heard it.
Okay.
Stuart Wayton, this morning, Dr. Wayton, is an opening question we asked other panel members if they supported the bill's aim to bring an end to the physical punishment of children. I wonder if you would wish to.
Yes, I think this is a tragic, depressing bill, and yet another one, which appears to represent the aloof, elitist nature of politics and professional life that treats parents in a very patronising and degraded way, uses all sorts of weird legalistic talk about violence, equating children with adults. That makes no sense at all to ordinary people, and criminalises parents despite, again, people trying to claim that it doesn't. People talk about the evidence.
I'm really sorry, David. We seem to have had a problem with that video clip. So you better fill us in on what else was said there.
Well, you got the main point, right? So it's this: it's elitist. It's taking taking the normal responsibility away from parents. One of the other points that Stuart Wayton made is that this is all couched in terms of children's rights. These rights are often made up on the spot, as they certainly were by some of the other contributors to that committee. These rights tend to multiply. And what Mr. Wayton was saying, well, you're confusing children and adults. When you talk about rights, children have protections, and you cannot view the same rights agenda for a child as you can with an adult, because they don't have, you know, the ability at that point in their lives to conduct themselves independently. And when you engage in this rights-based language, everything becomes problematized, everything becomes criminalized. And he raised the issue very bluntly that you're talking about criminalizing, making it a criminal offense for a child to be smacked by a parent who loves and cares for that child, and you're bringing the state in. And when the point you made about rights was, when you talk about children's rights, you're not really talking about children's rights. You're talking about powers given to professionals to speak for the child.
Correct.
Inside of the family unit. So, you know, it brings out a lot of important points. The opposing view was put by Professor Callahan, Jane Callahan. So she said here that smacking doesn't have a place in civilized culture, and she talked about parents losing control. She related it to domestic abuse, and tended to take a very sort of straw man argument to anything that was said by Stuart Wayton. Stuart Wayton here, this next slide, talks about undermining the autonomy of loving parents to decide how to raise their children, which is the concern. This also brings back memories of a couple of areas we covered on the column last year or so. One was this article, Curiouser and Curiouser. Now, this covers the person who was most at the forefront of the children's rights movement, and in setting up organisations such as Children Are Unbeatable to campaign for an end to smacking. The photograph you see here is essentially the mugshot, as he was arrested, tried and convicted for child sexual abuse and sentenced to over 4 years in jail. This man, Mr. Newell, also wrote the handbook to interpret the children's rights agenda for the United Nations, for UNESCO. So he had a huge amount of influence in this, and yet was a paedophile and child abuser. And no one seems to be even remotely concerned with that. And finally, here, another article we covered in the column. This was a decision by the Sir James Munby in an appeals case in the Family Division of the High Court of Justice. And he said, quote, "Put starkly, the state by its actions has denied these parents the right to decide for themselves, within the privacy of the family, what in their view as devoted parents is in the best interests of their children, a matter which, to speak plainly, is no business of the state." And what we saw in Scotland was the state winding up to make that very much its business once again.
Yes, okay, indeed. Right, now, however, it's not all bad news in Scotland, because apparently the SNP is proposing that Scotland gets its own currency.
Now, my nomination, I know it's early in the year, but my nomination for Tweet of the Year, right, is this character here, Brian Spanner. Brian Spanner is a anti-nationalist Twitter account, who is detested by the SNP because I think he's a member. I think he seems to be able to get into their conferences and things, and he tweets them inside the conferences, and they don't know who he is, and it drives them mad. And he has looked at this headline, tomorrow's headline: the SNP will propose a Scottish currency within the first year of a new independent Scotland. And he has said, quote, "Operation stab yourself in the bollock with a fork is a go." And that's profoundly accurate way of actually describing this policy, because what we're going to do is we're going to take apart a 300 and whatever it is year old tightly integrated economic, political, cultural union. Right, we're going to split that apart, and at the same time, we're going to introduce into this economy, into this unstable world economy, a brand new unbacked fiat currency, because that will go well.
David, won't this new currency be called the euro?
No, it won't. No, it's the Scottish, because we can't get in this. You can't get in. Oh no, Brian, you see, it's much worse than that. The reason it's not going to be called the euro is the euro has rules, and the Scottish government cannot satisfy the rules on the amount of government deficit.
Hold on a second. Are you suggesting that Scotland is in a worse position than Greece or Portugal or Italy?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm suggesting. Well spotted. Yes, much. If you look at the government deficit, much worse, because we've got the English to pay for it. Don't worry. I mean, it's fine, but when we no longer have this, we have a slight problem. So we can't join the euro without cutting the government by about a third. And they don't want to do that because all of the friends are in government. So we're going to have our own currency. Now, there's only one way that can actually paper over those cracks, and that's rampant inflation. So I would say two things. One, the name of the currency. The name of the currency should be the leasing. And secondly, if you're Scottish and this ever happens, buy gold, buy silver, keep stacking, don't hold Scottish pounds.
Okay. Thank you for that. Well, let's end on the matter of health, which, as we know from today's UK column news, is part of defence and security. We'll leave you to think about that. But this MP, Dr. Alan Carr, spoke in Parliament a couple of days ago. You can see it was a packed house. But she was in quite a state because she discovered that her dementia-hit father, who couldn't speak, she discovered him bloodied and bruised in a supposed care home. This was a very big shock to her, and it was particularly a shock when one of the staff from that home said, well, he asked for it. So this is part of what she actually says. "Nothing prepares you for arriving to find your loved one with black eyes, bruises, cuts and blood on their face. And I can tell you that nothing prepares you for discovering that these injuries, in fact, happened 3 days previously and nobody called you. No one alerted you. Nobody called an ambulance, despite the fact that somebody had a head injury, was on blood thinners and is elderly. And not a single person, not one, having any answers to how this may have happened or any proof at all as to how this occurred. So this lady MP was quite rightly extremely upset and presented this information in Parliament. We called her office to say we were very sorry to hear what had happened to her father, but perhaps she would like to know that these reports are now coming in with regard to elderly relatives in different care homes across the whole of UK, and some of the circumstances are far worse than her own case. Now, I have to say that the young man who answered her, presumably office telephone, one of her assistants, was reasonably polite. But when we offered to send information, it was very much, well, she might be interested, send an email. So I find it astonishing that this MP has clearly had a jolt into reality with a tragic event around her own family. But even that is not enough to get her staff at least paying attention to other people saying there is more going on and this needs to be looked at in some detail. Now, couple that with this article, with Stephen Glover speaking out in the Mail, says this: as a new presumed consent law clears the Lords, Stephen Glover asks, why do I find the idea of state taking ownership of our organs so sinister? And I've pulled out a couple of the paragraphs here because I think they are so spot on. As the Mail revealed several years ago, doctors surreptitiously developed the Liverpool care pathway. Without relatives being informed, terminally ill patients were drugged up and steered ineluctably towards death in their final days. That is a pretty sinister situation. He goes on, or consider what happened at Alderhay Children's Hospital in Liverpool between 1988 and 1995, which is not very long ago. The organs and body parts of hundreds of deceased children were removed without parental consent and stored for medical purpose. And lastly, is it altogether fanciful to imagine that in the new era of presumed consent, a well-meaning doctor might feel under pressure not to prolong the life of a dying patient so that his or her organs could be whipped out as soon as possible? So this is very, very dangerous stuff. David, I know, David Scott, I know that you've come across cases yourself where the NHS and the care system utterly abused for what? For profit, for body parts, for people's pleasure. Sometimes it's difficult to work out what's going on here. But we're in a situation where MPs are clearly living in a dream world until it hits them.
Yes, and not even then do they realise. And I think that's astounding. If that's not enough to make that woman a huge ally of everything we're working for in the UK column, to protect the vulnerable from the powerful and realise that the state is the mechanism that the powerful use most often to reach out to conduct their war on the weak. I don't know what is. And the idea that, yes, well, the state can own your organs, what could go wrong with that? It's a kind of naive faith. And this is where the state has become a religion. It's a naive faith in the goodness of this thing called the state, because individual people are evil and will do awful things. So we're going to give a small number of those people unlimited power, because what could go wrong with that? But because they're in the state, they will be public spirited, and they will no longer be subject to the drives, to the selfishnesses, to the evil that's in the heart of all other men. No, they're special because they work for the NHS. It's a form of lunacy.
Yep. a form of lunacy. And we'll just end with this one. I had to produce some form of graphic to sum this up. It appears that no matter what the subject you talk to an MP about or attempt to talk to the MP, whether it's crime, fraud, child abuse, false imprisonment, we're now getting this constant send an email. And the only way to get through this stonewalling by MPs is for people to be on their case every day by every means. And that includes visits, letters, telephone calls, and of course, turning up at every event that MP is going to be at. At the end of the day, it's up to us as to what happens in this situation. It's not enough to leave it to others.
Just mention, if anybody wants to read the article by Dr. Mike Williams on the UK Column website about the opt-in situation with respect to organ donation in this country, the state owning our organs. The headline is No Time to Die. You can have a look at that for that on the UK Column website.
Yeah. That's it for today's news. Both Davids, thank you very much for joining us. We will be back at the same time on Monday, and we'll push home that thought that it's up to us to take on these MPs. And also UK Column pushing out a lot of factual information. We need your help to spread and promulgate what we are broadcasting, because it is very clear that state censorship now in the United Kingdom is coming in very fast indeed. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.